Hello and welcome to another episode of PlanetIRL.com podcast. This is your host Cole, and I'm joined today by our old crew again. We have, as usual, Paul, and returning, making her return debut to the show, is Lisa. Our webmaster is back with us again. How are you guys today?
Doing good.
Doing good, Cole.
Still sleeping off Homestead?
Trying to work off the hangover, yep.
It must have been a long weekend down there. So, speaking of Homestead, last race of the year, it's over for 6 months. I have no idea what I'm going to do for the next 6 months. So, we'll just dive into some of the highlights of the Homestead race, if you could call them that. First race, caution-free in IndyCar history. I find that a surprise after what I said in our prediction show, Paul. Because I thought it'd be a crash fest, and one of the contenders would be out easily, but it didn't turn out that way. And some people call it processional, but we've seen worse this year. What were your main initial thoughts on the Homestead race?
Well, I kind of figured when it went green the entire time that people would mostly complain that it was processional. But from where I was on pit road, mostly down toward pit out at turn one, there was a lot of passing going on there throughout the entire race. Some a little more scary than others as the leaders and the faster cars caught up with a lot of the back markers. There was a lot of excitement going into turn one. So it wasn't a processional where people couldn't pass. It was just that you know, the leaders had gotten so far away that there wasn't a whole lot of passing. Or not as much passing as we have seen on other tracks up front for the lead. Although the Dixon and Briscoe fight for the lead throughout the entire race on who was going to lead the most laps, it was very entertaining throughout the course of the race, and I really enjoyed the race from being there standpoint.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa?
I have a little bit of a different perspective. I went up to the grandstands for the actual race. Having been to this course, you know, for the past 6 years, I was pretty shocked by the lack of an audience that was there. It was definitely the lowest attendance I've seen personally at that track. I think, you know, initially early on in the race, we saw some good passing, but, you know, from where I was sitting, it did pretty much come down to, obviously, as we all know, the three cars on the lead lap. And I think a lot of the passing was just due, you know, Paul, as you kind of said, to getting around traffic. So I think, you know, the way they build it here, especially locally, there was a lot of press around it, a lot of excitement around it. So I think, you know, just kind of the lack of the crowd, and then, I don't know, I mean, I'll kind of say the lack of action on the track was a little bit disappointing for me personally.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there were actually quite a few passes for the lead throughout it, but that was mostly, unfortunately, due to everyone's favorite fuel strategy that kind of took over the race and not only decided the race, but the championship. Three cars left on the last lap, were on the lead lap, and they were all three the championship contenders. Do you think that the fuel strategy deciding the race hurt it and it kind of decided the championship of who could go longer on fuel? Do you think that's exceptionally bad, or is that just, you know, part of it and part of modern racing?
I think that's just the way it just worked out this time. You're always going, no matter if that race is 300 miles, 400 miles, 315 miles, there's always going to be a question of whether one driver is going to have enough fuel to make it. That's just the nature of the beast when you have a limited fuel supply in the car. I think the fact that all three of the championship contenders were the ones that were on the same lap made it okay that they were the only ones on that lap because nobody was really going to race them anyway, at least not race them very hard if they were going for position. Where it, you know, if you would have had seven or eight guys, if those front guys had been the top three, then you would probably see the guys in fourth through seventh try to stay out of their way and kind of you know, let them race for the championship. So it probably would have played out pretty much the same whether there was three cars on the lead lap or 10. But it was disappointing that it came down to fuel mileage. Though in the end, it was still a strategy race. It's no different than strategy on a road course or strategy on a street course. You know, the rules of the race were the first person to finish 300 miles, and congrats to Dargo for doing that.
I think what was interesting, too, just playing into that strategy was maybe some of the calls that went on with Penske and Ganassi, because what I noticed was with probably, I'd say, I don't know, about 20 laps or so to go, I really did see Dixon, I mean, full out racing with Briscoe. I mean, going into turn three, I thought he looked a lot faster. He just couldn't make the pass. I almost wonder, you know, had it played out a little bit differently, if he would have. So I guess my question with the strategy is, you know, who was ultimately making those calls to not know that they wouldn't have had enough to keep going? And I mean, I was sitting with 99 Forever, who, you know, Paul and me met there, our Canadian friend, Stephanie. And, you know, we both kind of at the same time were like, why is Briscoe coming in? And, you know, it kind of dawned on us, oh, he's out of fuel. And then to see Dixon come in. So, you know, at this point, Dario was 20 seconds off their pace. So, you know, I don't know necessarily with 20 seconds of a gap why they were racing so hard and maybe not reserving a little bit of that fuel. I guess that's, you know, a question that may not be answered. But I thought that was very interesting, at least how to end it with that fuel strategy.
Well, what really surprised me was, you know, if you're going for a championship and you cannot finish worse than third, then it seems to me you really need to leave Briscoe out there and let him. I mean, you either win or you run out of fuel trying. You know, he came in at lap 194, I think, and so you can assume he could pretty easily have gotten to 196 or 7. And like Lisa said, if he would have dialed it down 15 laps earlier, he may have had a shot at making it. And if they knew without a doubt that there was no way he was going to make it, why not pit him with 20 laps to go and give him that time to try to run down Frank Keating, who was obviously in a mega fuel-saving mode, knowing that he didn't have to use anything extra. You know, if Briscoe pits with 20 laps to go and comes out 20 seconds behind him, you know, give him enough fuel to run wide open the rest of the race and make Dario sweat it out, maybe use a little more fuel. It seems that would have been the smarter strategy. To give him that extra fuel to let him race full out instead of bringing him in so late, you know, with 5 or 6 laps to go when, you know, at that point his hands are tied. There's no way to make up that. I think he ended up losing by 5 or 6 seconds. There's just no way to make that up in just a couple laps. So if you're not going to run him dry and you know he can't make it, why not pit much earlier and give him a shot to make up that ground? I think that, you know, I hate to question the captain's tactics, but I think they really missed the boat on this one. I think they could have given Briscoe a much better shot to win in the end than they eventually did.
And I agree. It just seemed like, you know, if you know he's not going to make it, why not bring him in as early as possible? Maybe take tires if you think you can do that amount of fuel time and let him run full rich and, you know, full bore and try to catch him, because you know you're not going to make it. Don't wait until, you know, the last fumes to come in. You know, Roger really just missed the call on that one. Do you think it's right that the championship, the entire championship, was decided by fuel strategy? I mean, it is racing and that is part of it, but shouldn't this be about the racing and not which guy can push the fuel the longest?
Well, I think in fairness to Dario, I mean, he did have a really good year. I think, Paul, as you mentioned earlier, I mean, he won several poles. He had a lot of strong wins on both street courses and ovals as well. So I don't think we can take anything away from him and just say it all came down to fuel strategy. I just think that race at Homestead obviously did, but I don't think you can say, you know, the whole season as a whole was led down to that. So in that regard, you know, it was racing. So, you know, they could have maybe played that strategy better, but I wouldn't take anything away from Dario in terms of the whole season.
Yeah, I completely agree, Lisa. Sure, the last race came down to fuel strategy, but this was the 17th race of the year. You know, if Briscoe doesn't, you know, crash coming out of the pits at Motegi, it's a totally different situation. So just the fact that you know, this was the final race. I don't think it's fair at all to say that the entire championship came down to a fuel strategy race. It's, and this was, in the end, it's one race out of 17. Whether it's the last one or not, you know, it counts as for as many points as all those have throughout the rest of the year. So it's a shame the final race came down to it, and it was decided by that in the very end, but there were plenty of other places through the year that these guys could have earned points.
So you think Dario deserves to be the champion after Briscoe and Dixon kind of led it the whole way, and they were dominant, more so than Dario the whole year, and then it came down to which guy could push the field the longest? I personally don't think, Dario's a great guy, and I'm not taking anything away from him, but I don't think he deserved as much as the other two. I think Briscoe especially deserved to win. He was excellent all year, except for Motegi. He might not have picked the right fuel strategy, but that's not his fault. He ran meticulously all year, except for Motegi, as I said. And I think he deserved a lot more than Dario did, and who could push the fuel the longest.
When you look even like halfway through that race at Homestead, you were still looking at Briscoe and Dixon with 612 points each. So, I agree. It's disappointing. I can only imagine. I know me and Paul were in the media center, and to see the look on, Briscoe, especially his face post-race, could have brought a little tear to you. But, I think like Paul said, that he had chances to get more points. It's bad for Briscoe. I think he had a great season. Maybe he'll gain it next year and get the championship. But, it is what it is, I guess.
Paul, do you
and really, to say Dario isn't deserving is really unfair. He was among the leaders all year. He, led the points after several races. He's the only driver that won races really on all four types of circuits. He won the mile and a half at Homestead. He won the short oval at Iowa. He won the permanent road course at Infineon, and he won street races at Long Beach in Toronto. If you win races on all four of those types of circuits, I don't know how someone could say he's not deserving of a championship. That's the ultimate. The IndyCar series is really the greatest test of driver diversity in the world, and I think Dario mastered all four of those and is a deserving champion. Maybe not the one that a lot of people wanted, and maybe not the sentimental favorite for people. That certainly doesn't make him less deserving, and not in my mind.
And
I think Briscoe, seeing as Dario's now two-time champion, Briscoe had a lot to kind of prove and to earn with this win. I think, like we said, Dario definitely, he came out the victor, so we have to celebrate that, and he deserved it.
And I'm not trying to discredit Frankie at all. He's one of the best open-wheel drivers we've seen in the last 10 years, but the other two really, it was their championship the whole year, and they were so good, and then it all just came to naught when, at the end of the season, he wasn't the champion. He's the one that lucked into winning the championship.
I don't necessarily agree with that. He had, the champion needed to score the most points through the year. And, there were times he kind of backed into his position. Certainly he wasn't necessarily the fastest driver on the track on Saturday, but the fastest driver doesn't always win. And, you can look at any sport, and, the best teams don't always necessarily win. It's the ones that get it done at crunch time. You look at, you look at baseball, where a wild card team will win the World Series. You look at football, where the Arizona Cardinals went to the Super Bowl last year. You look at, look over in NASCAR. You got Mark Martin, who won, however many races, five or six races early in the year, but, didn't even get locked into the chase for the championship until, one of the last couple races before that was done, because he didn't have the consistency through the years, or through the races early part of the year. So really, in sports, being the best or, you know, the superior athlete for the year does not necessarily mean you're the champion of that year. I suppose some people could argue that Dario wasn't the best driver of the year, but seeing that he won 5 races this year, which tied him with Dixon for the series lead, he, you know, won on so many different types of circuits, had to be up there amongst the leaders for a number of pole positions for the year. I don't know by what basis you would say he wasn't the best driver of the year, other than, you know, just some sort of personal feelings about him. I mean, by any statistical measure, I think you have to look at him as having one of, if not the greatest year of all the drivers this year, and which is reflected in his championship now.
He came back to IndyCar. Like, let's celebrate that.
Amen.
I think the conclusion we can all make out of this, though, and that everyone agrees on, is take the fuel knobs off the cars again. Take them off. We don't want them. No one wants them. No one likes them. Take the fuel knob off. Make it full rich or full lean for caution. No more adjusting the fuel knob. Take them off.
Yeah,
I think that adds a little bit to it. I mean, it is a strategy involved. I mean, that kind of gives some teams edges in races we have seen, so I don't know that I would agree with that necessarily.
I would be okay if they took the fuel knob off, but at the same time, if this was Ed Carpenter, Justin Wilson, Thomas Schechter, someone of that standing, if you will, if it was one of those drivers who had won the race, I mean, the conversation would be 180 degrees different at this point. We'd be talking about how great the strategy call was by the team to stretch the fuel mileage and beat the big boys. So it works both ways. There were people that supported Danica when she won at Japan in the same manner, and there were people that were detractors of her when she won in the same manner. I think people tend to see the situation as best fits their agenda. And in the end, it's a predetermined, pre-posted mileage that the winner and all the rest of the field has to complete. You know, the rules state that the first person to complete 300 miles is the winner, regardless of whether you're the tortoise or the hare. And this time, the tortoise won.
See, I just don't see it the same way. Don't get me wrong. Dario is a great driver, and I like Dario. He's one of the good guys in the paddock, you know, sans his wife, of course. But he lucked into a championship. The other guys led all race. They had it locked up, and the only reason they didn't win is because the gas ran out. That is not fair.
I think you're getting caught up, though, on this one race. I mean, if you look at the full season, yeah, Briscoe had a lot of wins, top 10 finishes, as did Dixon, but so did Dario. So, I mean, it was really, I think it was just really close this season.
Right. I mean, does Dixon get luck into winning that race at Japan? You look at some of their other victories this year. Dario at Infineon, when Scott gets taken out in the first lap, does Dario luck into that? You can go back all year and see situations where none of these drivers had perfect years by any stretch of the imagination. I mean, geez, Briscoe and Briscoe took out himself and Dixon at Long Beach, and gave Dario a boatload of points there. So there are situations all through the year where you can say a driver lucked into a given situation. But in the end, I think anytime you ask any of these drivers or any athlete in general, I think you'd be hard-pressed to find any athlete that said over the course of a year that the luck that goes against them is usually balanced out by the luck that goes for them. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting hung up here on the fact that Dario had some luck go for him at the end of the year, whereas through other points in the year, he had some luck that went against him.
You know, and either way, I think one of the things that is really good about what we saw this weekend is the fact that what other racing series in the world finishes out with all of the championship contenders within just a few points all of them finishing in the top three, and all of them leading the final race at the last race, and all of them having a chance on the last, 20 laps of the race to win the entire championship. No other racing series can say they did that. They do that. So I think that's a good positive.
It'd be like
Sorry, go ahead, Paul.
I was just going to say, it'd be like putting the top three golfers in the world on the 18th or the 72nd hole at Augusta on the final Sunday and saying, the winner of this hole, you guys have all managed to get here. The winner of this hole is your champion. I agree. There aren't a whole lot of sport leagues or championships that come down to this. Every series, it seems, whether it's a stick and ball or other racing series, seems to now have to reset themselves to set up some dramatic run for the championship. And the IndyCar series has been blessed the last 4, 5, 6 years where, since 2003, I think there's only been one or two years when they've gone to the last race with the champion already decided. So they seem to have the formula down now.
Yeah, NASCAR, take that. We don't need a chase. We're just that good. Ha.
Keep in mind, too, NASCAR also has twice as many races. So if we
don't detract, Paul. You're killing the jive, man.
Keeping it real.
Real doesn't work.
Yeah, I think that was the exciting thing with Hempstead, too, was seeing those three guys duke it out, and you were almost, at the edge of your seat, like, hey, don't get caught up in this traffic. So, I would say kudos to all three of them for bringing it down to the wire. It was great.
And, Paul, was it you that captured that picture of Briscoe's fiance after the race?
Oh, that picture kills me. Yeah, that's his wife, Nicole Mansky, and... somebody was saying how I was ended up in the right place at the right time. It's funny that I was so out of touch of what was actually going on during the race. I was actually only there because I thought Briscoe had won. So that was the only reason I was there. But
The look on her face really describes it all, doesn't it? It's
she was in absolute tears. There's another picture there too of Ryan Briscoe when he was getting out of the car, and then again when he's being interviewed by Robin Miller. Every time I've seen Briscoe over the last 2 or 3 years, he always just has that really crappy, goofy, cheesy smile on. He's always so happy and upbeat. And this picture, it's just the most fake, forced smile, trying to accept. And then the picture of him being interviewed by Robin Miller, where he just can't even fake it. Then it's there are very high highs and there are very low lows in the sport. And we saw the highs and the lows within just a matter of moments this past weekend.
He just looks so defeated in those pictures. There's a lot of emotion going on this weekend with all that happens. So, I'm proud that the IndyCar series can be that good without, making it manufactured by using a chaser or a playoff system or something. So, of all the things we complain about, that's a real plus for the series. So, are there any other things from the weekend you want to cover before we move into our award segment here?
No, I think on our on the planetirl.com site, we had a couple good posts from the weekend that people can read, just more fun stuff off track. And of course, we all survived the 105-degree surface of the sun, so it was fun. I just want to give a shout-out and say it was fun. I know me and Paul... And our other cohort, Matt, had a chance to meet a lot of our followers on Twitter, and it was just really great seeing everybody there. And Paul, it was very great meeting you. So just, I think, all around a great weekend.
It was a fantastic weekend from both at the track, off the track. We had a lot of fun both at Homestead and outside of Homestead with our cheesecake debacle that's probably been gone around the Twitter sphere by now. And getting to catch up with a lot of our tweeps around the track, and we had an excellent time, and looking forward, especially now in 2010, to continue those friendships and see some more great racing.
And there is something, Lisa, that I completely forgot to talk about here, and that was your experience Thursday at the track. If you could just tell us, I know you did a story about it. If you could just summarize your day Thursday at Homestead Miami Speedway and what went on.
It was very exciting. I know you and Paul have heard about it probably ad nauseum, but very exciting Thursday. I did the IRL two-seater ride. Want to give a big shout out to all those folks that put that together. It was so much fun. I recommend everybody do it. It's well worth the money. Did about three laps with Davey Hamilton at just shy of 180 miles an hour. And I got to tell you, like, you're anxious getting there, but the minute you hit go and you're flying down that track, just all of your anxieties go away. And it was just a great experience. Hitting those turns is insane. I honestly do not know how these drivers do this at even faster speeds and with, you know, 25 plus cars out there on the track. But just very glad I had the opportunity to do that. You know, as I said in my post on the site, I should have been an IndyCar driver because I just felt at home, all suited up and getting in that car. So it was very awesome.
You know, I saw some of your pictures from there, and it just, you'll all be happy to know that I'm already saving up my penny bank, as Lisa would say, for my trip that I'm planning already to try the two-seaters out. So if you haven't read her story about that, do read that and get the full rundown on it.
Be sure to read Matt Archuleta's recount of the weekend, too.
Yes, that's always good for
funny stuff.
That might be one of our funniest posts ever.
He did rag on his chauffeur driver a little harder than he probably needed to. But
I heard his driver was nuts. He was going, like, you know, 100 miles an hour in a minivan, but it's just what I heard. I don't know who the guy was.
Yeah, I don't know about that, but I'm sure the driver had something to prove by if he had to drive around a minivan all weekend and other people got cool cars.
That's right. So I think without further ado, we'll move into our end of the season awards. Usually we do our weekly four awards, but this show we're going to do our three awards: the surprise driver of the year, the race of the year, and finally the driver of the year overall. So we'll start with Lisa and the surprise driver of the year.
All right, so we all voted. We think the surprise driver of the year, we're going to hand off to Mario Marais. He started off a little bit slow this season, and as we all know, he had a tough year losing his father. And after that, he really came out. And, you know, I think, don't quote me on this because I'm going from the top of my head, but I'm pretty sure he had about four top tens after that race in Kentucky after going through that. So, you know, he finished out this season really strong, so that's why we're going to give Mario Marais the Surprise Driver of the Year award.
And now on to Paul for the Race of the Year award.
The Race of the Year, almost unanimously, I think everyone would agree, would be Chicago. Just a fantastic race from start to finish. You know, going three, four, five cars wide at one point is something that I don't think anybody had ever thought they would actually see again this year after the tough races they had at Texas and Richmond, and to see the series bounce back with great races at Kentucky and Chicago. Chicago was just one of those races that you don't see very often, to see, you know, 16, 17 cars within a second of the lead. And not even running just, you know, two by two like they used to do. They were doing everything they could to get to the front. All of them were slicing and dicing as much as they needed to. And kudos to them. They did it safely, much, you know, in contrast to what you'd be led to believe by Robin Miller. And in the end, it came down to one of the closest finishes in the league's history with Dixon just nipping out Briscoe. I'm sorry, Briscoe just nipping out Dixon there at the end.
Mm-hmm. And finally, the driver of the year, as decided by the three of us, it was pretty close. We couldn't pick a winner, but by a vote of 2-1, the Planet IRL driver of the year is Ryan Briscoe, because as many of you know, last year he struggled pretty mightily, and he was even talk of him being fired from Penske, and this year he bounces back and does pretty good, but he doesn't win the championship. But he really surprised a lot of people with not only his road racing ability, but he really came around on the ovals as well. So the driver of the year this year is Ryan Briscoe. And now we just want to wrap up here the show with our favorite moments of the year between the three of us, what we thought were the pinnacle of the racing year for us. And we'll start with Paul.
Well, I think I have to look and separate mine between a personal favorite and a racing favorite. I would say my personal favorite would have been the entire Homestead weekend. It was just a blast, really, from start to finish. Although I certainly had a fantastic time at Texas as well, so I would say that was a very close second. But it was just fantastic at Texas and Miami to meet so many people finally in person that I had tweeted with all year, and just kind of enjoy the camaraderie of the IndyCar family for a couple of days. From a race standpoint, I think the finish at Chicago, those last 10 laps were just a spectacular event to see those cars under the lights and to see them racing like we hadn't seen this year, like we had hoped to see the last couple of years. That was my highlight of the year, was the last 10 laps there at Chicago.
Mm-hmm. And Lisa, what was your top moment of the year?
It's so hard to pick one. I mean, when I look back at 2008 versus 2009, I mean, I have to go with Paul and just say meeting a lot of fellow race fans, also working with you, Cole, on the Planet IRL site. Just getting more involved in IRL than I ever was in the past. It's just been very exciting going to more races. I can't mention enough just meeting all of the great tweeps out there and just really good people. Of course, I have to give a shout out to meeting my man, Will Power, two times. Like, come on. You know, that was coming. And I think, honestly, I would have to give that IRL two-seater ride probably the best racing experience for the year.
And I think Paul said it best when he said, you know, the IndyCar family, and that's what it really is, you know, the hardcore group of us, and we all know each other. And I think that's my favorite of the year between, you know, meeting you, Lisa, at Kentucky and hanging out with you all day Saturday there, or just getting all the readers' emails and messages that they send me. You know, it's great to know that there are so many fans out there who really have our passion for the sport. But I think the racing moment of the year would definitely be the finish at Kentucky. That's a very exciting finish. You know, it didn't rival Chicago, but it was still a very, very good race there. So I think those would be my two favorite moments of the year. So I think just to close out, just a few housekeeping notes. I've had people ask me whether or not we're going to do a weekly show over the off season. We plan on doing a show maybe every 3 or 4 weeks during the off season, just to update on news and things like that. So maybe our next IndyCar show will be, you know, early November in that area. But we will do more F1 weekly shows until the end of that season. But after that, we'll just do, you know, a monthly show maybe. So unless there's anything else you guys would like to cover, any shout-outs you'd like to give, I think it's time to go ahead and back on out of the show here. Okay, I think that says enough right there. yeah, that just about covers
that. Now we go into our long, cold winter until, what, March of next year.
You know,
so now we enter the long Homestead hangover and look forward to
I know, I hate
look forward to the hopeful start of the year in Brazil next year, and after that we move to Long Beach and St. Pete and on to another great spring and summer of racing.
I've already started my clock countdown to the 24 hours of Daytona, so it's going to be a long off season. So I want to thank my good buddies Lisa and Paul for joining me today on the show. I want to thank you, the reader, for all of your you know, help and viewership of the site. This is all for you, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you here in a couple weeks on the PlanetIRL.com podcast.